And this is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
That's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Stock market closed 6 minutes ago. Dow back above 26,000. There was just a press event at the White House. President Trump and the president of Mexico announcing a what's being hailed as a landmark trade agreement that's going to bring thousands, maybe tens of thousands of jobs back into the United States. And stock market, it's responding. NASDAQ at an all-time high. I mean, imagine that with all of the turmoil of the coronavirus shutdown, all of the businesses that have been suffering. But the NASDAQ, the, you know, broad-based, slightly smaller cap stocks than what you have on the Dow. Not always. There are a lot of massive cap stocks on NASDAQ, too. But an all-time high. It's just unbelievable. And then at that press briefing, the president again talked about reopening schools in the fall. And I totally disagree with the president on this. He says that they may withhold funding from schools if they don't reopen in the fall. Now, the reason I disagree with that is because when it came to reopening cities and states, the president said that's going to be up to the individual governors. And nothing is more local in our hearts than our schools. And for the federal government to say, yeah, your government can choose when to reopen businesses, but the federal government will decide when the schools must reopen. But, of course, I don't even think we should have a federal Department of Education. I think it should be abolished. I think that cabinet position should be eliminated. I think we could save billions of dollars and just let schools be the exclusive province of local governments, states, counties, cities. That's how I think schools should be operated. But the president now says they may withhold funding. I do think schools need to reopen. I'm getting a lot of feedback from the 425, Tori. I'm the mom of an 11-year-old entering 6th grade and a 14-year-old entering 9th grade. I hope they're able to return to school as they are in need of the structure and socialization, and that'll be very difficult for us to maintain. My husband and I need to work full-time in order to live. My 6th grader is entering into advanced classes and is already having anxiety about what he missed out on this year. And that's from Tab in Lake Stevens. Yes, kids need the socialization. They need all of the education from home, as I said, is an absolute joke. But they need the socialization. Another one from the 206. Dory, I suspect the demographics of your listeners would lean towards sending their kids to school. If this were an NPR radio program, I would suspect the listeners would overwhelmingly want to keep their kids at home. Unless, of course, Inslee tells them otherwise. Well, you may be right about that. There's just one problem. This time of day, between noon and 3, NPR doesn't have any listeners. They're all listening to me. No, to Cairo Radio. They're listening for our news and everything else, too, of course. But, yeah, they kind of get crushed in middays. But that's what's so baffling, though. How is sending your kids back to school something that's divisive along political lines? I just, the data should be telling us that the data is overwhelming. That kids are at almost zero risk of COVID-19. They are certainly, there's all kinds of studies that shows that they are not carriers to anywhere near the extent of adults. Send them, get them back to school. Get them out of the house, crying out loud. Stop plopping them in front of a laptop at home and saying that somehow is an excuse for education. Or, if that is an excuse for education or a reasonable facsimile, then let's get rid of all the school buildings and let's just shift to an all-at-home learning platform. Think of the hundreds of billions we'd save during that, right? It's ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. So let's stop it now. Okay, let's get into the fastest 15. I got a great email from a Seattle cop, and he sent me the court documents of one of the guys that was arrested during the Seattle rioting. And as you know, our activist, pot-smoking Seattle city attorney, Pete Holmes, he has said he's not going to charge people who were arrested either on the rioting night or subsequent nights for, you know, being in the middle of the street or, you know, committing other things that can get a person arrested. And the cops have had it. And he sent me the official order from the Seattle attorney. The city attorney's office has made a decision that we are not filing charges on nonviolent protesters. And the nonviolent protesters were, you know, doing things like shutting down streets, taking over city blocks, taking over the East Precinct. So here's what the cop said, and we are not sharing his name. SPD detective. He said, my coworker, also a detective, was tasked with requesting charges against a suspect who ignored lawful commands given by Seattle police to leave the area during the initial protests turned into riots. Per the report, the lieutenant gave three announcements to disperse. After a large crowd formed and officers began being assaulted with projectiles. Despite having plenty of time to abide by the order, the suspect, a 25-year-old male, refused the lawful order. Officers arrested him, booked him into the King County Jail. Okay, so the city attorney says, nope, not going to charge him. Now, again, remember, Jay Inslee threw a press conference to complain about two county sheriffs that said, we're not going to abide by the business shutdown order. And Jay Inslee said, we cannot have elected officials determine what laws they're going to enforce. But the Seattle City Attorney has decided, for purely political reasons, that people who got arrested, got themselves arrested during the rioting, that he's not going to punish it. And that's why things spiraled out of control. Because everybody knew that government, local government, was afraid of them. And they became emboldened. And suddenly you had a drug war on the streets of Capitol Hill. Two teenagers murdered, executed, no arrests. We got a couple of murderers still running around our region. Somebody who was able to walk up to a dying 16-year-old child, say, oh, you're not dead yet? And then execute him with a kill shot. That person, that monster, is still running around the streets of our region. But it all started, you know, like the greatest fire begins with a single spark. It all started when it became clear that our weak city prosecutor, city attorney, wasn't going to deal with any of the criminals who were, you know, starting that blaze. So then what the cop wrote to me, he said, the city attorney's office is de facto legalizing additional criminal activity, failing to disperse. You're more than welcome to quote the email above. I've highlighted in red. I'll close with this. As someone who investigates and requests charges in all types of cases, I'm at a total loss right now. When the city council has made it clear that 9 out of 9 of them abhor the police department, the mayor cares more about politics than the safety of officers and citizens' lives, And now we're de facto legalizing more and more crimes in the city. I just don't know how I and others are expected to continue giving a damn about enforcing the laws in this city. This continued targeting of cops has officially defeated many of us. I never ever thought I would not be with the Seattle Police Department and in law enforcement. But over the past few weeks, as I watch longtime respected co-workers hang their hat well before their expected retirement dates, I have no choice but to evaluate my career options. This is an unsustainable career, and I fear what will be left of the police department and the city as the months and years move forward. That's from a Seattle police detective. And again, we saw the vision that Shama Sawant and Tammy Morales embrace of our future. When Sawant says, we want to dismantle capitalism. We want to dismantle our government. She takes an oath of office to uphold our Constitution, but then says she wants to dismantle our way of government. And I played that audio earlier today. I played it yesterday. I'm not going to play it again right now. But we have Marxists who are just determined to have a complete overthrow. We have a city attorney who won't enforce the law against criminals. That led to the murder of two teenagers. It also led to the 24-year-old Summer Taylor getting mowed down on I-5 because we had politicians and law enforcement allowing people to walk in the middle of I-5 for 19 straight nights. Everybody knew that was going to end tragically, and it did. And so, and that now the cops are going to, you know, they're not going to keep working. And so what we have is, you want to see our future? Just look about 2 weeks ago to our past. CHOP, everything covered with graffiti, with garbage, tents everywhere, heroin everywhere, gangs selling drugs, gangs murdering each other because of the drug turf war that unfolded inside CHOP because they knew that the cops weren't present. That's their vision for the entire city. It's their vision for the entire region because they truly believe that they can spread this throughout King County and then throughout the Puget Sound area and all of Western Washington. We're seeing in Olympia people going and smashing City Hall and the police department windows with impunity. Not a cop in sight. That was on the 4th of July. We're seeing it up in Bellingham with almost nightly violence up there. It's throughout the region. And it's by design. Because everybody's afraid to stand up to the self-declared Marxists who now have said out loud that they want to undo capitalism and our way of government. That's treasonous, as far as I'm concerned. But now it's just another day here in Washington State. Okay, up next in the Fastest 15... the cancel culture is still in full
swing.
Maybe
he's right. Maybe there is something the matter with me. I just don't see how a world that makes such wonderful things could be bad. Look at this stuff. Isn't it?
Back in 2004. My collection's complete. First of all, I had three daughters and Little Mermaid. This was the soundtrack of my life. Little Mermaid and Lion King and all those Disney movies when my girls were little. I'll tell you what. On Saturday, one of the great moments in parenthood, when we only had one kid, and my wife and I would love to try to sleep in on Saturday morning, and when our oldest was, I think she was still 2 years old. She was kind of precocious. But she figured out how to get up without waking us, turn on the TV, and put Little Mermaid or Lion King, one of those, in the VCR and fired up. And, man, you're laying in bed on a Saturday morning and you just want to get a little extra rest and you suddenly hear this music coming out of the living room. and you realize, oh, she's good for the next 90 minutes. Yes. Anyway,
she would sit through the whole thing, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Entertained. That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I think this is actually the first movie I saw in the theater was The Little Mermaid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
First one I ever saw.
I hid in the bathroom during the Ursula scene. I asked to go to the bathroom because she scared me.
Oh, she was scary.
She was very scary. Yeah.
First one I ever saw was also a Disney movie. It was probably 30 years before your first movie. Swiss Family Robinson was at the Bay Theater in Ballard. And that was the first movie I ever saw in a theater. Have they canceled that yet, Swiss Family Robinson?
Didn't they have
a Boy Friday? Was it Swiss Family Robinson that had a Boy Friday?
I don't know.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. They were slaveholders. Cancel Swiss Family Robinson. Anyway, The Little Mermaid is being canceled.
I don't think it's being played often.
No, that's true. Little Mermaid's being canceled in Copenhagen, Denmark. There is a Little Mermaid statue in the harbor, and people have now gotten to that statue and spray-painted racist fish on the Little Mermaid statue. Is there anything that makes the Little Mermaid racist? I haven't been able to figure that one out. Do you remember?
I can't think of anything. Maybe just because they're white? I don't know.
Probably. Yeah, she hasn't gone through a City of Seattle whiteness symposium yet. So anyway, Little Mermaid is the latest one. And then I like this one. The Washington Post has a piece that ran yesterday that says Washington and Lee University has to change its name because Lee, of course, was an evil general and George Washington was an evil slaveholder. And so the Washington Post is saying that Washington and Lee University must change its name. A little ironic coming from a newspaper named The Washington Post. They're so caught up in their insanity, they don't even realize that they are self-parodying now. All right, and all of that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes of the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world Wednesday afternoons. I always like talking with our buddy Brock Heward. And I'm not going to talk any sports today, or very little. I want to talk parent to parent about reopening the schools, high school sports, what it all means. I guess high school sports, but it's more from a parenting perspective. So we'll visit with Brock coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's Hump Day with Heward.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Wednesday afternoon, and that means it's time for our weekly visit with our dear friend, Brock Heward. Brock, good to talk to you. We missed you last week, but we'll have to pack 2 weeks worth of entertainment into one segment today.
Yeah, and I think you were gone the week before, so this is like a triple hump day. I mean, let's make this thing happen.
the very rare triple humper. Okay, and there's so much going on because more and more, Brock, baseball's supposed to restart at the end of this month, the NBA restart, but there's growing skepticism because guys are testing positive for corona. There's growing skepticism that these seasons are even going to happen now and even growing skepticism about football in the fall, both college and pro. Yeah. What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, here's what I think, and I believe, Dory, these next 10 days are the biggest 10 days for college sports as I have known them in my entire lifetime. And I don't say that lightly, and I don't try to use that as hyperbole. I think it's that important to see exactly what these spikes in cases mean. If indeed it is younger people, if indeed as the numbers, at least today, as you and I chat, are positive as far as the potency of this virus, and it is not nearly as deadly and lethal as it was 3-4 months ago when it hit New York and hit New Jersey, that as we see the death rates continue to plummet, that is a must if you want college sports as I have known it in my entire lifetime. Because if we don't, and we see an increase in deaths, and the infection rate means more hospitalization than we see anything like we saw in March and into April in our country, we will not have college sports. And if college sports go away for this fall in the revenue, it will destroy athletic departments all across the country. I think we will, coming out of it, see intramural sports in club sports at a much higher level. You will see diminished scholarships, diminished sports, diminished programs all across the country. So I think the next 10 to 14 days are some of the biggest in the history of college sports as I've seen it.
Well, and when you say that, are you thinking as a one-year blip for all these athletic departments and universities, or do you think that this will have a catastrophic coattail effect for years and years?
Well, a one-year blip, these athletic departments, Dory, they don't have, and I'm not talking the major schools, there's a dozen of them or a couple dozen of them in major conferences that have enough TV revenue locked in for years to come that can weather this and survive it. I'm talking the majority. I'm talking at the Division I AA level. I'm talking outside of the Power Five conferences, you know, the 60 to 70, those schools. I think they could weather it to a degree, but it would destroy many of their programs. You've already seen a dozen or more sports programs across the college landscape already canceled out, already done. You know, you had a full ride scholarship as a swimmer or as a golfer or at Akron, and you're just done. Your program just folded like that. Or baseball at Boise State is just done. It's over. And, you know, we will see much, much more of that. Many of these departments do not operate with big reserves and big savings at all. Many of them already operate right on the thin line and sometimes, unfortunately, on the negative end of things. Without college football, that creates 80% of the revenue for all of the sports within those programs. You could see, I think, catastrophic sports programs closing. Maybe not football in some of those spots, Dory, but as far as having 20, 25, 30 programs and scholarships, opportunities across so many of those sports, I think it could be catastrophic in that way.
Well, we're already starting to see that locally, too. About 3 weeks ago, Seattle Pacific University announced it was discontinuing its gymnastics program. They had a long, long, terrific heritage there with that sport. And so we're already starting to see it. And now, if you take away the cash cows of football and men's basketball, which prop up everything else,
yes,
then yeah, we're going to see an absolute sea change in college sports as we know it.
Yeah, I think there was already a feeling in talking to some of my peers in the industry before any of COVID and these struggles, there was already a feeling that this model was not sustainable. That maybe if you're in the SEC or the Big Ten, because of those lucrative TV contracts, you had a little more room and an opportunity to have some savings and some backing and maybe even for years to come. But for the majority of the colleges, and especially out in the Pac-12, and you look at some of the challenges, both Washington State, who leveraged some of their new construction and buildings and everything else, hoping there would be a windfall on their network end, and there wasn't. The Pac-12 network has been an outright disaster and not brought nearly the revenue for these programs. Yeah. And there was already a feeling like, geez, I don't know, I think we're going to have to lose a bunch of programs. So they're going to turn into club sports. That opportunity for, you know, that young aspiring swimmer or golfer or that has been there for decades and a couple generations, that may just go away. And yeah, if we do not have college football, there will be serious alarms all across the country at so many different programs, especially those that are non-revenue producing.
Okay, and then one level down, You know, we've got so many people listening to us right now, kids in the summertime who play high school sports. Maybe they're entering high school and they're listening. Their parents who've been so invested. You have two high school girls basketball players, a senior and a sophomore coming up. And there's growing talk. And I know you're as dialed in as anybody. I'm pretty dialed in, too. But this might not happen, or if it happens, it's going to look radically different.
Yes, especially in this state, with the decision making at the state level and what they have already shown and what they showed, you know, last spring and into the summer, and as aggressive as they have been to just shut things down. That is some of the speculation that I have heard from different athletic directors that's on the table, is to just totally shut it down until possibly a January 1 opening. And then shortened seasons for so many of those athletes. And these are athletes who aspire to go on to college, right, who have spent many of their years and their lives and their families, and it's important to them. And people will say, oh, sports? Really? Sports story? What are sports in the end? And I say back to them, sports are the most galvanizing thing we have as a community. There is nothing like sports in our community that brings the right and the left and the rich and the poor and the black and the white and all of them together to celebrate, to root for their teams in their own communities at a high school level, and to have experienced that at a collegiate level, at a professional level. There is nothing more galvanizing to bring everybody together than sports. So yeah, not just simply about a ball going into a hoop and the fame that comes out of it, but I'm talking about galvanizing communities, bringing people together in ways that in our divisive world and society as we know it now, nothing else is doing. So that is where it is just, you know, so challenging, and where I hope, as I said, these numbers over the next 10 to 14 days, these death rates continue to plummet, that people can look at that objectively. They can look at it objectively and say that the youth are at nearly no risk of dying from this virus. Thank God and praise God for that. And that the upside and the benefit of taking some risk of these people playing, and if coaches want to coach and they want to assume some of that risk, then can't they assume some of that for these young people and for their communities? So, yeah, there is plenty to watch for, I think, over this month of July, as decisions have got to be made sooner rather than later.
Okay, well, tell you what, Brock, I'm loving this conversation. We usually don't go two segments, but we will today. Stick around, Brock Huard. We'll continue this conversation. Love to hear from you as well. 98973 on the text line. More with Brock as the Dory Monson Show continues. Well, as I said, it's a very special Wednesday because we get two segments with Brock Huard. And I'm just fascinated by this discussion that we're having, Brock. And you made some really good points before we went to break there. Well, there's one other point I want to toss in, because everything you just said is right, that for traditionally the two galvanizing points of communities, which is what we need now more than ever, are church and schools. And we're the most unchurched region in the United States. And, you know, people can't attend church right now in our state for the most part. And then you take this away from the schools. So that's from a community standpoint, as you just said so well. But I want to talk about the individual kids for a second, because what I know, having worked and coached in the high schools, is that kids, it's not necessarily athletics, it's extracurriculars, whether it be band or drama or sports. Kids who participate in extracurriculars have a lower dropout rate. They have a higher GPA. The girls have a lower pregnancy rate. The boys have a lower crime rate. They have something they care about that might put some bad decisions on the side because they have something else they care about more than what their peers are trying to drag them into negatively. And this is, and you can hear the anger welling in me, Brock, because as they talk to us about how we got to close the schools and we got to shut all this down to protect our kids, they better realize that there's a counterbalancing negative effect if they do all these things to protect our kids. And the fact that that isn't even part of the equation is an absolute shame for all the people who are making these decisions.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And that's on an individual level with each of those kids, and then the team level, and then the community level. And when you learn that, you know, it's bigger than you, that, it, you know, in these team sports, some of the greatest values you learn is to look out for that person next to you. To your point, that sense of community that you have. And when you don't have that, and you see the destruction, you see the addiction numbers already up, you see the suicide rates already up, you see the anxiety and the depression already up. Having endured that for just a shutdown from what, March until, you know, June, basically, with school, and in something that nobody had understood, with death rates that were absolutely worth shutting things down so we could learn, so we could observe, so we could study and analyze. But at some point, you have to weigh all sides of that. It's hard to do. I understand that position of leadership is a daunting one. If you're in a position to have to make those decisions, if you're a private school that's going to have to make those decisions, if you're a church moving forward and making those decisions. And yeah, I hope the folks in the public sector really take in all facets of that and see once again that these young people, that's what I, 2 months ago when I lost my mind or whatever it was. And, you know, I just said, I'm breaking here. I gotta just let it out, Dory. It's not for me. It's not for you.
Yeah.
It is for our young people that are going to continue to shape this this country, this great country we have moving forward.
Yep. No, I absolutely 100% know kids that I coached and basketball saved their lives. I mean, they would have dropped out. We organized study tables, team study tables. So the kids who were going to Ivy League schools were tutoring the kids who otherwise would have dropped out, and parents were helping out. And we built a community to keep them in school so they could get a diploma. But the only motivator was that they loved sports. And you know, some people would say, well, that's ridiculous if that's their only motivation. That's reality. And for some kids, that saves their lives. And I just want to echo what you just said. I know that they have tough decisions to make. They better take everything into account and not just the scare that's being perpetrated.
And I would say, like, people would say, oh, my gosh, if we lose one life, if one kid, well, what about that one life that is lost? And you could say, well, what do you mean by, well, what about Joe Burrow? I mentioned this to you via text last week. Joe Burrow was a quarterback at LSU this last season. Joe Burrow, had his career been over, or he did not have his fifth year at LSU, and they just said, well, you know, we're just done with football. We're not going to play. Guess what? Joe Burrow would not have been drafted, would have gone down a different road. Football would have been over for him. But instead, he played out and got that last year at LSU with an unbelievable supporting cast and an incredible season. He had arguably one of the greatest years in the history of college football. He won a Heisman. He won a national title. And he became the number one draft pick to the Cincinnati Bengals in his home state of Ohio, where he has already raised hundreds of thousands of dollars in his own community there. And he's going to have generational wealth to impact how many different lives in that community all around him and in his family, not just with wealth, but with his resources being spread out. That is that one life that's going to impact tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands for years to come. And without last season, none of that would have been possible via football and via that route. So when we talk about one life and that kid this fall, who's got to play football this fall, who may get a scholarship to college and be the first to ever go to college in his home and have that opportunity to change his life, his family's life, the people around him and their lives. Be careful when we're just talking about what one life means, because one life's journey and sacrifice is very different than others.
Brock Heward, you are my pinnacle of sanity in a sea of madness. I appreciate you coming on with me today. That was great stuff, man. Thank you.
That's Triple Hump Day. You got it, Dory. A lot of things built up in there.
Brock Heward, you can hear his podcast, both Above and Beyond, and the Brock and Salk podcast, both via MyNorthwest.com. Have a great week, Brock. Talk to you next week.
You got it, Dory. Sounds good, bud.
All right. Brock Heward with us, and love to hear your thoughts on what you just heard. Text us at 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead. Are you ready, Brock? As the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.